My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast podcast. Very excited for today's guest, John Rady. His book is all about how exercise can benefit your brain, not just your body, but your brain, both from an emotional standpoint, your cognitive abilities, and more. It's really, really good stuff. As always, if you like the podcast, please give it a 5-star review and also subscribe. That'd be awesome. Here we go. We will be speaking with author and associate clinical professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, John Rady. I read his book, Spark, the Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain. He's written 11 books. He's got over 60 peer-reviewed articles, and he has established himself as one of the world's foremost authorities on the brain-fitness connection. We'll also talk about his most recent book. It's been a few years now, but Go Wild. I'm intrigued by that, too. I've got that on my wish list. Dr. Rady, I couldn't be happier to have you on because, frankly, and I've told my listeners on my radio show this, I've tweeted about this, yours is one of two books that I've read in the last 6 months that's transformed my life in a way that I'd become cynical enough to believe that I didn't think a book was going to change that much. But your book, Spark, really changed things for me.
Well, that's great. It's wonderful that when you hear this, that a book can do that much for you, you know? It's great. And I'm so passionate about it anyway. And to get this kind of reinforcement from you and from, you know, people all over the world, actually. So it keeps me in the game because I'm very much involved now trying to get a slice into the how exercise really makes a difference with COVID.
Let's start with this because, and I'm always hesitant when I have somebody whose book I've read is on, I try to remember like, okay, wait a second, we got to start with the basics first. And I would just say simply, since I read your book and over the last 3 months, as I've kind of implemented a lot of the things that I've learned, I feel more stable on a mental and emotional level than I ever have in my entire life. My anger management issues are just completely almost nullified. We'll see. I haven't run across certain people face to face yet because of COVID. So we'll find out about that. But I guess just for our listeners' sake, tell me why this has changed me so much. What has daily exercise done for me that perhaps people might not realize it could do for them?
Well, most people just think about exercise as a way to tune your body up, you know, to lose weight, to get more buff, whatever you're looking for. But really, exercise is there for us. We need it in our lives now. We grew out of being hunter-gatherers when we were moving all the time. We were lifting, we were running, we were climbing, We had to be, and we were on it. We were in. We didn't have to work at being present. We had to be present because there is danger all around us, and we.
That's true. Mindfulness was kind of a daily necessity, right?
Yeah, you know, you had to be, because not only is it just moving around, foraging, and getting and picking up stuff along the way, but also being not wanting to be cat food, because there are all these big cats out there wanting to eat us up, and other humans. But in the main, when we exercise, what happens is we get back to that steady state of being that we were in before. And so what do we see in today's language, in today's world? When we exercise, we are getting our emotional life under control. Along with that, we are getting much more cognitively enabled, meaning we can think better, we can remember better, we take in information better, we associate better, we get more creative, and at the same time with our emotions in check or actually boosted to make us more motivated. So we're less anxious, we're less stressed, we're more positive, and we are more social. Mm-hmm. We're driven. We're more in a space. Our brain has changed, and we're much more likely to be social.
Well, and I guess and when you say the brain has changed, I think some people might think of that almost metaphorically or psychologically. Physically, your brain is bathed in neurotransmitters when you start exercising, and in your receptors, you become more receptive to those neurotransmitters as well.
Exactly. What happens is, the basic formula is this: when we're moving, we are using more brain cells than in any other human activity. And when that happens, we release a lot of neurotransmitters, a lot of hormones, and a lot of growth factors, because the brain is a muscle. You got to think of it that way. The more you use it, the better it gets. And when we use it a lot, it dumps out all kinds of these chemicals to help it grow, just like our muscles grow when we're exercising. So our brain grows. That's so important, because what we know since really 2000, the only way we learn anything is for our brain cells to grow. Mm-hmm. We have to grow in the information for us to really nail it, for us to have a memory of it.
Well, and that the part that made the impression on me perhaps the strongest, at least earliest in the book, was when you talked about the evidence that it begins immediately, in that hour and a half or 2 hours after exercise, you're really primed to make connections, that your neuroplasticity is at an all-time high, and that's when I started looking at it like, wow, this is a performance enhancer. I'm very short-term oriented. I have a hard time thinking about the long-term, but man, when I started thinking about me having a mental challenge or a work task or something, that I can kind of just get a cheap little performance enhancer by working out for a half hour beforehand. That's what sparked it for me.
Yeah, but no, that absolutely. And in fact, the way to sustain motivation about exercising, because that's usually the biggest problem we have. We start and then we tail off. Is to remember how you feel today. Just the way your short-term analysis is great, because I want something now. And so when you go do a run, or you do jump rope, or you do weights, or you do push-ups, or you do squats, whatever, for a period of time, you are going to be then ready to take on the world, to take in the world differently than you would have just approaching the world without having jazzed up your whole brain. Because we know what happens. Your brain gets turned on. Mm-hmm. It gets lit up. And when your brain's lit up, it's ready to go.
One of the really encouraging things in your research has been how much exercise can help people with ADHD, anxiety, depression. And when you wrote Spark, it was 2008. And I know you had mentioned in there a few times that there seemed to be resistance from mainstream medicine to this notion that exercise can be as good for depression or better than SSRIs or, you know, Zoloft and Prozac. It seems just from reading things in the mainstream media, for lack of a better term, it seems like that resistance has lessened a little or a lot. Maybe since your book and a lot of other research has come out, it seems like doctors really fully grasp it now.
Oh, yeah. No, they do. But it's still too often a genuflect. It's saying, OK, we need to do this. You need to do this. But not with the, unless they're an exerciser themselves. They do yoga, or if they're in a running club or a biking club, they're not going to push it with the same enthusiasm that someone who comes from that environment, Quebec, the province of Quebec, mm-hmm. some years ago said and had this law that all doctors at every visit will give an exercise prescription to their patients. And I mean, it's just, you know, and any doctor, if they went in for a dermatologic exam or, you know, a radiologist, they were supposed to always write a prescription for them to exercise. In other words, just to cue them to the people, the patients, to do it. I'm sure that doesn't sustain, but it was a great idea, and I got forms and everything from it, but I'm sure it's not being generally used like that. But that's the kind of thing we need to get to. Although today, with our changing world, when it's all telemedicine,
yeah,
that's even harder, you know? Yeah.
Well, that's my co-host on my radio show. His sons went to Naperville High School in Chicago, which you reference heavily. That's what you open up your book with. You open up the book Spark with Naperville High School, and then also Titusville, PA. Two very different demographics, I suppose, socioeconomically. I mean, Naperville is a pretty affluent area. Titusville, PA is old Rust Belt, Western PA. Western PA. But both places have implemented really extensive physical education programs, and not gym class, but genuine physical education where they have to do some form of cardio every single morning. And so I talked to one of Sean's sons, his name's Sammy Pendergast. And I asked him, did you notice a difference? And he said, well, I don't know, because I was in that program my whole life. So at the time I couldn't tell you the difference, but I definitely did notice the difference when I got to college, how I felt when I was exercising and when I wasn't. But that Naperville program, has that started to catch on? Because again, this was 2008 when you were writing about it. And trying to convince school boards to spend more money on physical education right now is really swimming against the tide.
Yeah, no, it's fits and starts. Who's really been interested in it is Asia. The Asian countries who believe in science, you know. and they have, I'm always called there to start Naperville there. I mean, that's what they want. Everybody wants to import Naperville. And now Naperville is on its own. I mean, it's embedded in the community, and that's what you have to do. So, because what happens usually with school districts, the school board changes. You know, mm-hmm. we have 50,000 school boards. So even with a centralized push for it, it's going to be very difficult because everybody's going to vote differently and have their idea about what's important and what's not. And then you might have a principal, and that's people I mentioned in my book, giving examples. You know, somebody is really into it and they get it involved in this and they get it embedded in the school, but then they leave. And then somebody's not as passionate or against it or think it's useless, or just see the typical is an administrator will say, well, this is just for the jocks. you know, this is just for the athletes, when it's not at all. It's not at all.
Oh, yeah. If anything, my friend's son's biggest complaint was he wished there had been basketball and other things, you know. And he said his junior and senior year, there's a boys only program that actually gets pretty competitive, that that he really enjoyed that part of it. But yeah, it's not. But I could see where, when you talk about the politics of it, a school board member that can stand up and stand for, you know, financial responsibility and get rid of, look at what we're spending on gym and all of that, it's an easier sell. I thought about that as I was watching one of your TED Talks, because as you started in, you started off with a fun, it looked like 10 Hindu squats, which everybody enjoyed a lot, right? Because you got to get their brains primed for your presentation. But as soon as you started the presentation, I tried to put myself in the shoes of somebody in the audience. And I figured a lot of people, when you first start talking, the immediate knee-jerk reaction is, oh, great, this guy's going to tell me that exercise is good for me. I know that. And then hypothetically, in my own brain, I started arguing with this hypothetical person saying, no, wait, there's more. So do you face some resistance from people that figure, yeah, I've heard my whole life about how exercise is good for me?
Right, yes. Yes, of course. But then I quickly pivot and say, look, it's not just for your body. You know, it's not just to get you more fit and to get you more buff and all the other things that exercise can do. Those are important. But what's really important is you get your brain better. You make your brain better than it can be in, given any other boost, any other, you know, medicine, Prevagen, or whatever, gym, brain gyms or brain exercises. No, physical exercise will bring your brain to the highest level of its of plasticity, of being able to take in new information and improve your creativity. All these, I mean, we know it happens, and we know pretty much how it happens, or what the constituents are that we can measure that are different.
Yeah, I guess that's probably a surprise to a lot of people, isn't it? That it is pretty clear cut, that you can figure out exactly, especially perhaps with either depression or ADHD, you know where the I don't know if disorder is the right word, but you know where the breakdown in the brain is, and you can see what the difference is with exercise.
Right, but we just finished, my partner and I just finished our fourth ADHD book. It's coming out in January. But and a big chapters in there are chapters in exercise, which was always been something we pushed, but also on the cerebellum, on balance and rhythm, which are also very important for the brain, you know, and it's getting more so. This is, if there's one area that's really expanded in the past 20 years, it's that. It's realizing how important that is for physically moving and all that kind of stuff, but also for our higher brain functions. We need to have them organized and working smoothly and effortlessly together. And
Well, that's where, and you know, when you move on to that part of exercise in the book, that's where it does get, it's really interesting, is the how much, okay, aerobic exercise, working out at 60 to 70% of your max heart rate, that's very, very beneficial. But then when you add in the element of complex movement, it seems to, the theory would be right that, yeah, you're doing what you might be doing as a hunter-gatherer then. You're moving and you're trying to figure out how to get over terrain, climb trees, do all those things. And then that's when you're really at your peak evolutionary capability. You're doing everything that you were evolved to do.
Exactly. And you're using all the brain resources that you can. And that's what the brain loves. It's just like doing different kinds of muscle work. You know, I mean, looking at all the YouTubes here in quarantine and, you know, doing this, doing that. Oh, why not do this? So we do a little Zumba and, you know, me doing Zumba. Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's different. It's a challenge. It's a challenge, man. And then you get to the point where you get a little competent at doing it, and then it becomes fun. And that's what you really want. But the big issue these days is getting enough exercise in our quarantine, you know, stay at home, situation, because the best exercise is doing something outside, something with a group, something that's fun. That's the best exercise.
In the group part of it especially, huh? Yeah. Because I know for so many people, without the group or without a partner or what have you, it's just done. And I Peloton and I do things and I'll do videos online, and it's just not the same. It's a simulation somewhat, and I like it and I enjoy it, but it's not the same as being part of a group.
Right. No, the groupiness is, I mean, because one, when you do exercise, you turn on the, increase oxytocin, which is our bonding and love hormone. And so you're more likely, you're more wanting to attach to people, to bond with people. And you also communicate that you're more bondable. You're more lovable.
You know, you kind of have that aura about you.
Yeah, exactly. You're ready, and they people pick it up. So that's why after.
So what you're saying is it's a love potion.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. Yeah. It's called that. You know, and that's why you see the unbelievable success of CrossFit. You know, I mean, yes, great. Movements, their OMB, whatever, you know, the daily charge, but it's also because they have a group that they meet with, and you see this, people from all strata of life are in a situation like that, and they become friends. Mm-hmm. So people that would never associate with other people in whatever strata, you know, doctors with plumbers, you know, I mean, it just happens, and they become friends, and they go for a coffee, and they, you know about their families, and, you know, wow. And that's by the way, such an important factor in health and wellness in general is being connected.
So I guess in a non-COVID environment, one of your first recommendations would be, other than just to start exercising, probably would be to try to find a group in which to exercise.
Exactly. The success of Zumba groups, of yoga groups, of spinning groups, long before Peloton, you know, the spinning groups, you know, years ago when that started, it was amazing to me because my patients, and I wasn't even paying that much attention to them, but they would come in and talk about their spinning group and how somebody a new person wanted to come into their spinning group. It was like,
That's kind of like the scary part, but also the beneficial part of a tribal feel, right?
No, they got the tribe, and they people walking in, oh no.
that is the dark side of it, as we kind of get back towards towards recognize our tribal roots.
Right.
It's that you also have to remember, we did some really ugly stuff to each other back in prehistoric times. You got to find that right balance.
Right. No, but that's very powerful. Very powerful, and that's very health promoting. We have all kinds of evidence over that. Looking at, you know, that the most important thing as we age, keeping us from using our doctors, is connected. How social we are. Way more than taking your medicine as a doctor prescribed, or even more than exercise, which is more potent, twice as potent as taking your medicine.
You know, one of the more powerful stories you tell in Spark is of one of the kids that you had that was in the court system. He'd had behavioral issues, and he started playing the dance revolution, right? That was his form of exercise. Yeah. And it was just a very uplifting story because it changed his life. But I also thought about the kids who have ADHD, and the ones who respond so well to exercise. I mean, at that point, you start to wonder, all right, how much is ADHD an actual disease or disorder versus society and inactivity is the actual issue? Because these kids, if they grew up in the 1800s working on a farm where they had to do 2 hours of chores every morning, absolutely, they probably would be asymptomatic for whatever their issue is, right?
Exactly. And that's what we, in our new book, we make that point again and again. We've made it in our previous books, but now we're really pushing that it's really a trait and it's not a disease per se. We even want to change the name, but the fact is it's we all have attentional issues. You know, we can't all be we all can't be as attentive as we want to be all the time. And so and how to manipulate that in people who have it bad, you know, that's why you being in the professional athlete sphere, you know, a lot of your colleagues, a lot of them were ADD. Mm-hmm. And if they're doing 3 or 4 hours of working out, keeping in shape, and then playing or practicing, that's a great treatment for ADHD, you know, a great treatment. Michael Phelps, wonderful example. He had ADD and started swimming. He didn't need medicine. He needed it before, but now he didn't. And so people have, and there's all kinds of athletes like that. I mean, everybody.
I had mentioned that to you when we were emailing that I talked to a very good NFL defensive line coach once who had a theory that a lot of, I believe he thought a majority of his better defensive linemen probably had ADHD, either diagnosed or otherwise. And he thought that it was specific to defensive linemen because it's very much of a, you know, see squirrel, chase squirrel, eat squirrel kind of world. You're just constantly supposed to, it's one snap after another. I just got to go. I got to catch that squirrel. Whereas other positions on the field might require a little bit more foresight and planning. And it got me to thinking about when I was in college, how impressed I always was with the distance runners. Because I know at Cornell, at least, and I assume it's like this at other schools, the highest GPA was always the cross country team, you know. Yeah. And I always assumed that it was some part of their personality that lent them well to, you know, being academic. It's a sustained effort. Like people like that probably do well in training for cross country. But after reading your book, I was wondering, like, which is the chicken and which is the egg there? Is that constant daily endurance work and the sustained endurance work over years and years, is that just such a performance enhancer on the academic side?
Oh, it is. And I don't know whether I even have it in the book, but I talk about my first ADHD patient back right as I was leaving training.
The marathoner. Was a guy
who was a marathoner.
Yeah.
You know, one of the early marathoners in Boston, you know, where it all exploded. And he had been a marathoner all his life and came to me when I started talking about ADHD. And he said, you know, can I come see you? So we talked and he says, look, he's amazingly productive. He was a professor at Harvard and at MIT. And he said, and I've never not been productive. Now, since I hurt my knee and I haven't been able to run, I'm a mess. He said, I can't get organized. I procrastinate. I don't return phone calls. I get angry. I mean, these are part of the ADD personality, you know, or prescription, anyway, symptom cluster that they have. And I put him on medicine, the medicine helped, but then he was rehabbing, and then I followed him through. And once he got to the point where he was back running, he didn't need medicine. You know, it was like he was self-medicating with his exercise.
Have you done any work in prisons? Because you had so much success with a lot of the adolescents that you talk about. Has there been work done in prisons or with say, ex-cons?
Ex-cons, yes. I mean, individually, I've seen a whole bunch. But the prisons are always, they're hard to do anything in terms of research. It's just too many lawyers.
Oh, God.
Anyway, but... For instance, one of the big things that are taking over or being used in the prisons a lot is pickleball. Okay, pickleball. You can't imagine that being such a, you know, how can these rough, tough guys or weightlifting and all that kind of stuff in prison, they're playing pickleball. But it really works, and yeah. Really, what it does is is reduces the their aggression, their outward stupid aggression, you know, that they get into, and builds up relationships and all that. Such a dumb little thing, which I love, by the way. I'm saying it, but for them to do something like that, but it really hit a wave, and they've been on 2020 and or 60 Minutes, 2020, whatever, to show that this is something that they need. And so what the secret sauce there was, their exercise was moving, and also then relating differently to their friends and their foes in a way that helped, you know, stem the tide of outward aggression and help people move. So
I would imagine. I would imagine too, if you're mixing up teams and whatnot. And, exactly. Yeah.
Well, pickleball, you know, you're always changing teams. You know, I mean, it's always changing. You know, it's.
I'll have to. Yeah, I haven't played it. I know we played it in phys ed. And my wife, who is a phys ed teacher, has always told me how much the kids loved pickleball, and they love it. Yeah,
because anybody can do it, and it's fun. You know, it's just like a little bigger than table tennis. You know, you're running around a bit.
You know, since we're talking about the prisons, usually when people associate working out in prisons, it's more they get their prison muscles. You know, they get swole from lifting weights. At the time of your book, there hadn't been a whole bunch of research done on resistance training's effect on cognitive function. Has there been more research in the last decade or so?
Oh yeah, and in every area of exercise, there's just been a ton. Like with yoga, back when I wrote, there were a lot of studies, but most of them from India, and so you didn't quite know. But now, almost all the kinesiology programs in the U.S. have an interest in yoga, and then a yoga and what it does for the mental health, what it does for cognitive improvement and all that. So, same way with resistance. A lot of studies now out from all over the world that we're looking at the effect of resistance training, of strength training on all the varieties of academic performance, cognitive performance, IQs, EQs, being more emotionally contained, being less depressed, being less anxious, all that's being done. And there's a lot of good evidence that it's perhaps just as good as aerobic exercise, and might in some cases be better. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's, you know, people want to know what's the best. Well, the best is something that you challenge yourself, that you get your heart rate up, because that's just a measure of how much muscle you're using, and something that's fun. And if you can do it with others, that's a big bonus. And if you can do it outside, that's a trifecta, you know, that's the best. So something like dance, okay, dance, okay. It seems like, oh, well, come on, that can't be. Yes, because you're having to think. You're having to move right, then you're having to move to the music, then you have a partner. Oh God! I mean, think how complicated that movement is.
Yeah. You know,
for your brain to figure all that stuff out.
And then I would imagine the trust involved with that partner, so your oxytocin is just off the chart, right?
Exactly. All that stuff. All that plays a role.
Boy, I can't think of anything. Now that you mention it, with dancing, there's almost nothing more primal when you consider all the complex movements, but also our whatever our evolutionary drive to dance and respond to dancing is. It just kind of checks off all the boxes, doesn't it?
It does. And you know, and close behind is the martial arts, because, you know, without the music. So you, you know, because it is about movement, it is about paying attention to the other movement. It is about, you know, getting your forms exactly right, you know, and high levels of aerobic activity. And I'm telling you, it's and we see this. Okay, back to the ADD world. I mean, one of the ways of helping kids with ADD is you get them involved with dance or an exercise routine or exercise program. But martial arts, huge factor in promoting kids from going from needing to go to a faraway school out in the West, Utah and Wyoming and Arizona and Colorado, where they send kids that they can't manage.
Yeah.
To these special schools. When I first started working with these, with that kind of group, I was shocked at one of the conferences that, back in 1990, that one of the things that they were all talking about was their dojos, was their, senseis, was, getting the right person in to teach martial arts for everyone. And that, so they had sort of figured out that this is a way to do it, because a big part of the right sensei is about respect of the other, respect of your own body and then the other person. And so, so you build in that social, the social learning there. And it's really something.
In a very conducive environment, because you've primed the pump with the exercise, right? So you've got the brain that's going to be very accepting and open to maybe rewiring a little bit and changing the way you behave and then however you had been the previous 12 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. I think I put it in the book about Naperville, but one of the major things that freaked me out when reading it or learning about it is that this one PE teacher, their sort of head PE teacher for one of the high schools, had said, well, he's going to have dance, a segment of dance in his PE, which was not one of the things they were had there. And then he said, what he's going to do is have people talk to each other before they, a partner. Every day they were assigned a new partner.
Yeah.
And he gave them scripts to talk to each other, because he knew it. Ninth graders don't, they're not very facile in talking to other sex, the opposite sex. So he had to break the bonds there. And so, and then I told him when I was observing, I said, you really want to check and make sure they're staring at each other and they're looking each other in the eye. Mm-hmm. Because that's so important. We get so much social information from the face and the eye. And so he started doing that. He said, okay, at the end of the first day when they were out, he wanted people to say what color the person's eyes were.
Well, and those are such basic things. You know what that reminds me of is Bill Snyder, the football coach at Kansas State, who's just legendary in terms of his ability to work with kids and bring kids along and teach leadership. One of the things that he does to teach leadership, because everybody talks about leadership in football, especially, they love to talk about leadership, but they don't usually actually teach guys how to do it. That's one of his exercises is they start off having after practice, they have to stop and have a several minutes long conversation with one of their teammates and get to know them, get to understand them, where they come from, learn something about them. And then they do it the next day. And it's all about increasing your sphere. First, you do it within your position group. Then you do it outside of your position group. And it's great for a football team, but it's teaching all those kids something that they probably never would have done, to consciously and systematically get to know everybody in an organization and to attach a lot of importance to it.
Well, when I would talk about this to a whole bunch of psychiatrists and tell them what they're doing there, and I mentioned this, and they said, "Oh my God, they're preventing so much social anxiety."
Yeah.
Which is rampant, people don't, and you do it sort of normal. Okay, this is gym class. This is just PE, everybody does it. So when everybody does it, you just do it,
You normalize it. And
Yeah. Just like Bill Snyder, it's perfect,
But especially these days with kids with their heads buried in their phone, yes. I'm sure eye contact is in an all-time low, right?
Right. You got that. But also you mix that in with movement, and then you got real growth of of our social muscles in a way, you know, and decreasing our social anxiety muscles.
So so now you've already got me inspired, and now I'm gonna have to go sign up for dance lessons with my wife for whenever this is all over, whenever we're allowed to take dance lessons again. Okay, I've got one more practical question based on the book before I want to ask you about your COVID stuff. As I told you, I look at it as a performance enhancer now, and there's a part of me that wants to get like 4 bouts of exercise in per day so I can really take advantage of that 1.5 hours post-exercise. But I'd imagine at some point it gets to be overkill and counterproductive. What's the tipping point? At what point does it harm you more than help you?
Yeah. The Tour de France guys, okay, they measure everything. Mm-hmm. And there was a big study going on looking at when cortisol increased. Cortisol is stress hormone, and we, you know, and usually when they're exercising in the beginning, there's no cortisol. A lot of us will have cortisol released to help us do better, but they are so well trained, they don't need any of that until about an hour and a half of intense training. And then cortisol went big. So they said, well, we should stop that. We should focus on more the high intensity interval trainings, because we'll get a better result over a longer period of time. So they broke it up and they took the rest and recovery and then came back to it. But what you're talking about, doing these intervals throughout the day, not a bad idea, you know. But first of all, if you just do it in the morning, okay, you just start your day this way and you do an hour or an hour and a half or half hour, you're going to have a way better day the whole time. Your brain is going to be switched on more than it would be the whole time. Plus, you have an effect of, oh, I'm doing this, I can do this, I'm more confident, I'm feeling more confident, and that will stay with them, that they are in that mind space to do that. However, it's true. The effect does start to diminish after about 3 hours or so, 4 hours, in terms of that big jolt you get of increased performance. But as you do this, if you do this repeatedly, that is daily, eventually you will build up bigger muscles, performance muscles in your brain to help sustain that.
And that actually, that part of it helped too, because I was on a 3-month roll of not missing a single day of exercise when I had to have the surgery that I told you about. And you had mentioned that, yeah, after chronic exercise for a period of time, your levels remain elevated and then also rebound a lot more quickly than if you had just worked out for sporadically for a week here and there. So I felt better about that. I was almost going into depressive funk because you'd gotten me productively addicted to cardio. But I feel I feel like I came out of it just fine.
Well, I mean, for instance, I think, you know, cardio is sort of the base of the exercise, but most any kind of exercise you do, you're going to get cardio training, you know, I mean. And that's the thing about weight training. I mean, now I've been locked down here, I've gotten into kettlebell, you know, going on the net and doing kettlebells. I mean, you know, and that gets your heart rate up there. You know, you do that and mix it in with real aerobic stuff, and holy mackerel, you know, it's a way to really get in shape. And I've gotten stronger than I've perhaps ever been. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Our old strength coach Dan Riley, who was with the Redskins, he was the first Well, going back, I'll go. His resume was he was a strength coach at West Point. He was the first full-time strength coach at a college in America. And then he went to the Washington Redskins and was there with them through their Super Bowls. But he was very much into high-intensity interval training very early on, you know, in the 1970s. And the studies he had done at West Point were that the kids that did the high-intensity training, just lifting, no running at all, outperformed and improved more on their mile and a half test than the kids that were just running, you know? And so, yeah, he, and you know how that is. You can do a 15 minute weightlifting workout on a circuit that's the worse than any 45 minute, anything you've ever done before.
Yes. If you're challenging yourself and stressing yourself for that, you know, and then you have to do that. So,
what are you learning from COVID and what concerns you the most with your research?
Well, first of all, the it's going to be with us. Okay. Even, you know, we're going to, by June, they estimate we're going to, you know, a lot of us are going to be in vaccinated, but it's still going to be there. And it's still going to say we should watch our social gatherings. So that's always going to be there. And right now, especially, is getting through these months, you know, we need to pay attention to how to make our body and our brain best. It's really important. This is another motivation. Okay, when we exercise, we do all these great things for our immune system. We decrease chronic inflammation, which is in medicine for the past 10 years, it's been the big bugaboo. Reduce chronic inflammation, because that leads to all kinds of problems, cancer, heart problems, also brain problems, also, you know, early Alzheimer's disease, all that. And then it also boosts the immune system, the immune response, the antibody, which is part of it, and then the T cells, which is a gobbling up cells that we make. Both of them are improved, and our whole immune response is improved when we are exercising. Then you reduce the three top comorbid so-called indicators of bad news if you get COVID. One is obesity. Two is diabetes. Three is heart problems. So if you're in fine, you know, in good level of fitness, you are much more likely not to have a bad outcome. Now, it doesn't guarantee it, because you certainly hear about these marathoners who are dead, you know, and so forth. But we now know that there are three ways that exercise affects the body in a way to help prevent bad outcomes with COVID. Mm-hmm. The first is it reduces the binding site, ACE2, which is stuff all over our bodies that COVID binds to. Okay, and it makes for a better balance of that whole system, so that it's not going to be as welcoming for COVID to bind to, especially in the lungs. The second is that it creates another antioxidant enzyme that I learned about with COVID that's all over the body, and I should have known about it before. Then by your moving your muscles, you create more of this specific antioxidant that works in the lungs and helps prevent lung problems. And this is what we really want with COVID.
What's the name of that?
It's called it's called extracellular superoxide dimotas.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, it's not a nice thing to say.
Well, it's a ESD or something like that. It'll get an acronym soon.
Yeah, ECSOD. Yeah, that's what they anyway. Extracellular superoxide dimotas. Anyway, and the third thing that it does, that exercise does, is that it increases the concentration of interferon. Now, interferon, we've probably heard about it in relationship to cancers, and but it's an antiviral. It's something, our internal antivirals, that works to chase away and kill viruses. Bingo. So you have these three specific reasons to spend more time on fitness.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, I really look forward to your new book as well. What's the title?
The new book is ADHD 2.0.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's going to be a big deal, you know, because there's a new way of thinking about ADHD, new looking at a strength-based treatment, as well as looking at the use of exercise. And you know, right up front, we talk about the cerebellum, you know, which no one has ever really spent that much time talking about with ADHD. But, you know, for instance, kids with ADHD and adults, more than 50% of them are not coordinated well. You know, they have discoordination somehow. So by helping them get more coordinated, your brain works better.
Yeah.
You know, and so doing, you know, jump rope or doing yoga or standing on one foot while you're brushing your teeth and, you know, that kind of stuff really helps.
Well, that was one of the pleasant side effects, I suppose, or benefits of reading your book, Spark, is I learned more about ADHD, and it opened my eyes to, I think perhaps maybe a lot of the assumptions people have about ADHD are very, very wrong. And I was guilty of that too. So I look forward to reading, first your original, kind of your seminal book about ADHD, which helped open up everybody's eyes to it. So I would encourage everybody to go to johnratey.com, RATEY.com. Look for him on Amazon, 100% read the book Spark, and then also look for his new book, ADHD 2.0. Dr. Rady, I really, really appreciate it. And again, I thank you for writing that book and opening my eyes to a lot of things and helping out a lot of other people.
Great, great. Well, it's good to have the conversation with you, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So,
well, there he is, John Rady, just a complete and total gentleman, isn't he? Also, since I referenced it a couple of times, I said that Spark was one of two books that's changed my life, but I didn't tell you the name of the other book, Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's an easy and proven way to build good habits and break bad ones. Love that book. I'm trying to get James Clear on the podcast. He's been difficult to pin down. I got to go through gatekeepers to get James Clear because he's very, very busy. So we'll, you know what? If you feel inclined and you want to reach out to James Clear on social media, tell him what a swell guy I am, that would be cool. So, Spark, Atomic Habits, really, go to johnratey.com if you want to keep up with any other things that he's doing. He's also, I talked to him for about 20 minutes after I stopped recording, and I kind of wish I'd kept it on. He's got some really cool plans for how to make this more systematic, how to get more people, from the top levels of government, encouraging schools and kids and families to be doing all of this. And I think that's really the only way you could ever get a lot of this done. You know, corporations too, I think, and getting them involved in insurance companies. If you're interested in that at all, there are different ways that you can get involved in that. My wife is a phys ed teacher, or she was a long time ago, so she's very intrigued by a lot of the stuff that John Rady is doing. As always, I love that you guys spend time with me one or two times a week. If you're so inclined, please feel free to leave a review on iTunes, subscribe, all that good stuff. And everybody, just be well.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.